Yeah, thanks everybody for coming this morning. We really appreciate you guys coming out, you know, blocking out some time on Saturday to join us. I'm thrilled to have an opportunity to share a little bit with you guys. I've always felt a little bit of a special connection to the Oklahoma crew here. I remember when I went to my first Navigators Conference summer, I was probably like a junior, sophomore college or something like that. The first discussion group I was ever in, there were these guys, there was Dr. Spann, Dick Borchardt, and Elmo Joseph. And I just sat there like a sponge, just trying to soak up all the wisdom in the room. And I'll just never forget Elmo was telling some kind of crazy stories about shooting rats at a junkyard or something like that. So, you guys know that. You guys know some of those. So
that was his first date with his wife.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. So, so I was listening. I was just like a sponge soaking in, and I was a new believer at that point in time in life, and I was just like, man, this is awesome stuff, soaking in, learning from the wisdom of these Navigator guys. And so I've just really been enjoyed being a part of their organization since then. There have been a couple other Oklahoma guys I had some connections with since then, and good to catch up with Olson again this morning. So, my name is Ryan Henderson. Like I said, I've been a part of the Navigator organization for a number of years now, since I was in the middle of college, and just want to share my story with you, share a little bit of my testimony and just some of the concepts of, you know, what's our purpose in life, how do we determine our priorities, and what's that look like in the world of, you know, leading a family. So, when I was a kid growing up, I didn't know the Lord. My family was one who, we got up and we went to church every Sunday. My mom was the spiritual driver of our family. She made sure we were there for every Sunday school and church. But that was just the thing we did. I didn't know the Lord then. It was just a going and doing activity kind of stuff. You know, when I was a little kid, it was a Baptist church, and I went and got baptized. And I just consider that time. I just went and I got wet. That was just like a thing to do. You know, we had some information and knowledge about the Bible and what it looked like to be a Christian, but I was just doing stuff just for the sake of doing it. I didn't know the Lord then at that point in time in life. Generally, as a pretty decent kid, you know, had some shenanigans here and there and the stuff that we did, and, you know, pretty much knew what I was doing was the wrong thing to do. And really, my life just placed spiritual things on the back burner. Well, you know, when I grow up, that's when I'll go to church and be serious about this stuff. Otherwise, let's just go have fun and live life the way we want to live it now. You know, I just looked at churches like, well, if I go to church, well, mom will be happy, and then I'll have more freedom in life to go do the things I want to do. And some of my friends are there, so it's fun to hang out with them. So that's kind of was a kid growing up. That's kind of the stuff that I got into. You know, as I was getting older, high school age, was just really motivated to go live for me. You know, my thought at the time was, oh, I'm going to go to college, do something kind of smart, and hopefully make some money and climb the corporate ladder and, you know, find somebody to be married with and have fun in life. During that period of time, so after high school, I joined the military, spent a year doing military stuff, and there was a summer period of time where I was getting ready to go to college. And a buddy of mine at that time, he had just come to know the Lord. He had made some poor choices in his life and had a conversion experience there in college, but he ended up coming back home to where we were at. And he just kept sharing the Lord with me. He shared with me with the stuff what had happened in his life, and just he just kept telling me all about, man, there's more to the Christian life than just going to church on Sunday. You got to read your Bible and live this stuff. And he just kept telling me all about the stuff he was reading in the Bible. You could see a visible change in the guy's life. You know, he just, like a 180, went from living a life that was not real desirable, making some poor choices, to everything in his life was focused on living for the Lord then. He just, over and over again, just kind of kept telling me about, man, I'm reading this in the Bible. Have you read the Bible lately? And I'm just, man, come on, let's go play basketball and swim in the pool and have fun. What are you talking about, this Bible stuff? But I'll never forget the time we kept go to church and stuff, and so we're sitting in the back pew at church, and he takes the Bible and he plaps it up. He basically stuck the Bible and put it right on my lap and says, here, man, I read this morning. Read this stuff. And it was a passage in Matthew 24 that talks about, you know, two are going up a hill and one disappears, and that kind of thing. And that just really got, you know, kind of planted some seeds of thought in my life of, oh, hey, maybe I should start thinking about this stuff. And he just kept telling me about it. He was reading Matthew at the time. He's like, read the Sermon on the Mount, man. This is Matthew chapters 5 through 7. You got to read this stuff. And so I went home that Sunday afternoon and started reading through those verses of the Bible, and it really convicted me in my heart about the way I was living my life then. I was living a pretty typical life and just justifying the things I was doing, and just many passages in there just revealed to me where I stood with the Lord, and that I was living in sin, and that it wasn't the way God wanted me to live my life. It was at that point in time that I asked the Lord to be my Savior. 1 Peter 3:18 says, "For Christ died for sins, once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. He was put to death in the body, but made alive by the Spirit." And that was a verse I'd known from going to camp as a kid. That's the verse I prayed there, is, "Lord, I'm a sinful man. I need a Savior, and I want you to do that for me."
Amen.
With that was like a few years, or for a few weeks, right before I went to college. And, I went to college with a different outlook on life. Instead of thinking about, well, hey, how can I make a bunch of money and do things for myself? What does God want me to do with my life? So I just went up there. I was kind of on my own when I first went up there, and just with the single purpose at this point, I kind of need to find some people to read the Bible with and do this Christian life with, and keep doing that kind of stuff. And I got involved with a campus group up there and just, prayed about it and tried to find one that fit my schedule. And there was one where they had this guy doing a Thursday night Bible study, and that he invited me to. He's like, "Okay, cool. Are you guys going to read the Bible and talk about it? Because I want to figure this Christian life stuff out." And ended up going to that for a little bit. And this guy there, he invited me to meet just him one-on-one with him. And we went through the little Navigator booklet of lessons on assurance and growing in Christ. And through going through that, he helped me learn how to have a quiet time, learn how to memorize verses, learn how to pray. And we helped hold each other accountable. At that point in my life, I had a lot of things from the old way I was doing things to the new way I wanted to do things that I was really struggling through and needed to work through, and needed somebody to help hold me accountable for doing those things. And that was just super, super impactful for me. It was such a big help to meet one-on-one with this guy and have that kind of accountability and being in the Word and in prayer and learning those things. That's how I decided what I wanted to do with my life. I said, "Man, this is so helpful. If this is so helpful for me, surely this is helpful for other people." So that's what kind of shaped my outlook on what I wanted to do for the purpose of my life. And since that point in time, through a series of other events, got involved with the Navigators and, married and had some kids and ended up here today. But just want to share that with you kind of as a background of who I am and how I end up here today. So what in the world does that have to do with time? It's kind of the topic of the hour because it's an important one. With the craziness of the world and the things we do things, how do we figure out what's the right stuff to do? David and Chris have already talked on purpose and priorities. I've got a couple things in here I want to talk about that for. I don't want to dwell on those too long because those guys have already hit on those things. But I kind of want to throw my flavor of that stuff out there because to me that's important. That's how I process those things in the context of the day-to-day and how I manage my family and life as well, too. So I'm going to just kind of touch on those things. I think it's important because, just kind of share a quick story. We have a jet ski and we like to go to the lake. And so this summer we had some friends come with us out there. Another family's got some kids. So on this jet ski, we got if the kids are old enough, I'll let them drive and kind of sit behind them and kind of help them out and everything. So I got this 8-year-old kid in front of me, that's my son's friend, and I got me sitting here and then my son hanging on the back. So we got a 3-seater one, and this kid sitting on here, he'd driven a jet ski before, so it's like, okay, cool. My son's him the same age. He can drive it. And this little guy gets on here, and he's just having a blast. And like, have you ever driven a jet ski before? He's like, yeah, but this one's way faster. And so he's just kind of, going to town. And we're in the area of the lake where it's like, yeah, it looks like we're okay, we'll be good, cruising along. And all of a sudden, before I could react, to the surroundings, what's happening, he's going too fast for this wake that kind of just comes out of nowhere that I didn't see in time. All of a sudden, we just hit this wake with, like, pretty good-sized wake of, like, the perfect speed of making a really good ramp. And, if I was driving, that'd be cool. Like, hey, that was a nice, ramp. I can hold on. But I'm holding on to 8-year-old little guy, and he's holding on to handlebars. So 8-year-old little guy, he's not holding on, hitting it that fast. So jet ski goes this way. Me and two little boys go this way. And, we're off your way up in their water floating. And they're like, hey, is everybody okay? Because that was kind of crazy, And But that's what life is like. You know, everybody was okay, and we swam back and got it. But, you know, you're cruising along thinking everything's peachy, and all of a sudden here's this massive wake out of nowhere that's like, whoa, man, that just hit me upside the head. I wasn't expecting that. How do we react in those situations? How do we choose what's the thing to do when the craziness of life hits us in the day-to-day? So to me, that's why I think it's important to develop a purpose for what we're doing and having a goal. So I want to point your – so lots of pages in the handout here. Chris, drew a cool picture. For me, this is the illustration in the crazy way in my brain that I process purpose in life and priorities is this picture right here. So, you know, we got guy running towards our goal. We've got to have the right goal in mind to be able to decide what we're going to do with our life. You know, many different activities we can fill our time and our capacity with. We've got to choose, you know, green arrows, the ones we're saying yes to, red arrows, the ones, you know, we got to process that and decide not to do them. So this is a kind of the framework that I process my decision-making with, and just kind of want to help illustrate that. And for me, having a purpose in mind sets what this target is. So that's why it's important to have a purpose in life. I've kind of developed my purpose from just over the years from the Navigators. I stole my goal in life from them. It's to know Christ in my own life in ever-increasing depth and to make disciples at all times in any places and whatever we're doing. So there's some verses there that go along with that. I'm not going to read through all those there, but the point of that is having that experience in life and digging through the scriptures and deciding what to do with my life helps shape my life to where I had a goal in mind, and that helps me decide what I'm going to do with my time and energy, where there's constantly a tension in our life of the choices we're going to make and how we're going to spend our time. So for me, it makes it easier to process those decisions if I got a goal in mind. If something comes along and it fits the goal, yeah, let's do it. If it's something something comes along and it's not within the goal that I've got in mind, that's an easy way to say no. Hey, it doesn't fit the goal and the purposes I've got developed for my life. So that's why I think it's important to develop a goal for your life, whatever that may be. I would encourage, you know, I borrowed mine from the Navigators after, you know, some time of processing that. I just encourage you guys to process for yourself. What's it look like to have a goal in mind? The wheel in this picture, the wheel is not the goal. The wheel is a tool that develops disciplines and habits in our life to get us to accomplish the goal. So don't let the picture deceive you. This is what we're running after, but that's not ultimately the goal. Ultimately, the goal is to know Christ in our lives and make disciples. The wheel is a framework where we can gauge our life against to determine how we're doing it, doing those activities in life that's going to drive us towards meeting those goals. So, I'm not an expert at that kind of stuff. There's been many times in my life where I took a look at what I was doing in my life, and I took a look at the wheel, and I was like, man, my wheel is out of whack. I'm like, my wheel is squished and flat, and I got not enough word, not enough prayer, and my wheel is bumpy going down this road. Or I got a major flat tire, and I'm sitting here straight on the side of the road because I'm not obeying the things the Lord's teaching me to obey. Just, you know, quick story on that, there was a time in our life where, excuse me, I've got a drink here. Mark 4:19 is probably over the last, few years of our life, has been one that has really shaped, helped me determine priorities for what I want to do. It says, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desires for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. And so at that time in our life, that came out, who's done Every Man a Warrior? So book 3, Mark 4:19, that's where that comes from.
Can everybody hear him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So at this stage, a few years ago, so once we first got married, didn't have any kids, you know, first kid on the way, there was a guy who I knew in life who came along, he was getting ready to move, and I'd always told the guys, like, man, you got a cool setup, I love your house, if you ever move, tell me before you put it on the market, so I'm going to make things work to buy the place. That's like a dream setup for us. And lo and behold, first born on the way, me and my wife have been married for a couple years, and guy says, hey, I got a job in Oklahoma City, I'm selling the place. What do you got? Let's do this thing. And so I'm like, oh man, we're scrambling. We got to put our house in the market, get it sold, buy this, you know, ended up making things work where we bought this house, nice house on 10 acres, cool big barn. We thought it was the sweetest thing ever. You know, once we bought the house and moved in, our son was just a few weeks old. And this is cool. This is awesome. We're in our dream house set up here. We're going to make this thing work, even though it's a little tight. But we just thought this was great. You know, 3 years later, didn't think it was so great. You know, I had gotten in a position with my job where I really enjoyed the work I was doing, but I was probably putting in too many hours. I had a longer commute, and so I was spending more time on the road and trying to focus on, you know, making things happen in the corporate world to where I could be the guy and climb the corporate ladder. And by the time I got home for work at night, doing stuff around the house, was just doing, you know, burning up time and energy, fixing up stuff around this cool house we have here. You know, we went through this Every Man a Warrior study and took a look at, you know, the purpose of that lesson is on budgeting your money. I took those lessons in this verse and it convicted me in my heart that how about we budget our time like we're budgeting our money? If I looked at my time budget, I'm missing some things in my life that need to be there big time. And so we made some hard choices in that time. We're like, this isn't working. Let's do something different. So we made some pretty big decisions there. We ended up selling our house and doing some things, making some pretty big changes in our life because we were convicted by this, saw these things that were missing in our life. You know, if I looked at the wheel, I was missing fellowship. I was missing witness. I was missing word. Because I didn't have time to do all that stuff. So we made some hard choices to be able to do some of those things. So in your life, you may not be in a situation like that. It may be something little. It may be something big, whatever the case may be. The point is that the elements of this wheel are critical to being able to live a vibrant, successful Christian life. And that helps shape our time and energy and how we do those things. So just to kind of equip you guys, how many guys in here have seen the wheel illustration? Everybody pretty much. So I'm not going to go into in depth in each one of those things. I want to talk about those just kind of real quickly in terms of what's that mean for time management. You know, it's critical that we have the word in our life. So Elma, what time do you wake up in the morning?
4:45.
Okay. Lance, what time do you normally do your quiet time?
4 or 5:30.
Yeah. Chris, what time is your quiet time usually?
4 to 5:30.
Yeah. Every single man I've ever met that was successful at living a vibrant Christian life had their quiet time the first thing in the morning every single day. So if that's not a part of your regular routine, I would challenge you that needs to be a part of your regular routine. That's a time that when you look at how you're spending your time in the wheel, that's a non-negotiable going to be a part of your life each and every day. You know, you may miss a day here and there, but that's something that's critical in shaping the time and how we spend our time and energy is making sure we have that in our life. Memorizing and meditating on Scripture, that doesn't take any time. Lance, when do you normally review your verses?
When I'm driving.
Yeah, same here.
I have a long drive.
That doesn't take any time to do that. So you can memorize your, you know, something come up at work, you got a few minute break, walk in the next meeting, I'm sitting on the can, whatever. Memorizing and meditating verses doesn't take time. That's a critical element that should be a part of our Christian life. That doesn't take any time at all, other than writing it down on a note card so you got it with it when you need it. Prayer. It's great to block out a chunk of time to where, hey, I'm spending some dedicated time and purposeful prayer. But you can pray anywhere. You know, pray without ceasing. Rejoice always. In everything, give thanks. That should be a regular part of our Christian life to be healthy and living for the Lord and having a focus on how do we minister to other individuals. You know, pray with, you know, phone rings at work and you're sitting there before you pick up that phone. Lord, help me to listen to this person on the other end of this line and love them with whatever the situation is. You know, before I'm, Lord, help me. I'm about to send this email, and it might not be a fun topic we're talking about. And help me to understand this project, blah, 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 blah. Whatever the case may be. Pray without ceasing. We can pray all the time, regardless of how much time is in our life. Fellowship and being a part of the body. It's critical to be involved in activities where we're a part of a body to encourage one another. Some things in our time that we always make time for is being a part of a small group and one-on-one discipleship activities. So if that's not a part of your time activities the way it is now, I would encourage you to make that a part of your time activities. Being a part of a church, a body of believers, that's an important part. And I want to, on the, and witness and obedience, living it out and practice those. This thing right here, this is a tool that I use to help gauge where I'm at with some of my activities and make sure I'm hitting those elements of the wheel. You know, so it's a practice I do is I think about where am I at with life, what does the structure of my wheel look like, am I hitting these things? And this is just my crazy way of having some fun with an Excel spreadsheet that helps me do that kind of stuff. Getting pretty nerdy with some alliterations. We got faith, family, finances, family, and fight. And so that's where this is a print off of exactly what's hanging in my bathroom right now that I look at every single day. And so this is a tool where I sit down and my wife and I, we work on this together to develop, hey, how are we spending our time? Are we hitting the things that we need to hit in life? Faith, I want to make sure I got an intake of the Word. I want to make sure we're memorizing and reviewing verses. We're a part of a life group. We're a part of what we call a D group. And I want to make sure that I'm challenging myself to have an outflow of that. So I'm just kind of walking through the columns there, you know, having a witness. Family, these are things we block out that are important to us that we do with our family. Are we, you know, tucking our kids into bed? Am I reading and praying with them? Am I helping my kids memorize some verses? Spending quality time with my life, with my wife. And so I'm not going to go through every column, but this is just a tool that we use to kind of help gauge where we're at. You know, I don't check every box. I'm not perfect. I make a lot of mistakes on here. Sometimes I go through the month and I'm like, oh, man, I did not do so good this month. But this thing's hanging in front of my mirror in my bathroom to where I get to see it all the time. And part of our small group where we're here with other men is, hey, guys, help me be accountable with this stuff. I'm not doing, you know, fight. What's something I want to not do as part of what I'm doing that's taken away from me doing the things I want to do? I put it right here. Don't, you know, something, just small little challenge to myself. Like, don't mess with my phone when I don't need to be messing with it. Help me be accountable for that kind of stuff. So, you got this here as a template. I put my email on there. If you're a guy like me and wants to have some fun with an Excel spreadsheet and want the copy, and you can take it and make it your own. But I would just encourage you to kind of think about your life in terms of, what does my life look like if I'm comparing it to the wheel illustration? Are there spokes where I'm running on a flat tire and there's something in my life the Lord's challenged me on, and I need to be obedient to it? Or do I need to block out some time for the Word to get deeper in the Word? Or am I missing in fellowship or some of these other things? So I would just encourage you to take a look at that and evaluate your life in terms of that. And that's how I do it. That's what makes sense to me and what the Lord's kind of shown me in a way that I do that in my life. But then life happens. You know, you got a wife, you got kids, you walk home to the door from work and the trash can's overflowing, there's dirty dishes everywhere, some kid spilled something over the floor, and there's, you know, a number of youngins running all over the place. You know, like Chris said, it's like a zoo. It's like, well, how in the world do you cram all this stuff in when you've got your wife to take care of, your home to take care of, and four kids running around? So I just want to share a few things of just stuff that we do as a married couple and, you know, parent of four kids that we do in our life that helps us do some of those things. So I think about investing time in my family like dividends. So you guys like investing? I mean, different ways you can invest. You can stick in a mutual fund. You know, Lance does cool trading grain kind of stuff. You can slap it into a stock market and hope you get massive rises in capital gains. I think about investing my family like dividends. I want to put some time into things repeatedly, over and over again, small little chunks of it, in hopes that overall, down the line, these are going to add up and be big gains later on. So that helps me be patient, because as a man, I'm sitting here thinking, let's go do this, let's get it done. Why in the world's a house not cleaned up? It should be clean. We like clean houses. You know, our kids doing behavior things. Like, man, come on, kid, don't do that. And that helps me be patient. I think patience is a big thing for me that helps me understand and listen to my wife and work with my kids and understand that the value of stopping what I'm doing, taking whether it's 10, 15 minutes out of my day or an hour to dedicate to time with them. So marriage. So if you're not married yet, the marriage relationship you're in is going to be the single biggest decision that's going to shape your spiritual and worldly life down the line. You know, how you interact with your wife is a huge part of, you know, when I look at my wheel in my life, how are we going to do these things together? Who you're married to and how you manage and lead your marriage relationship is the single biggest thing that's going to impact that kind of stuff. So if you're not married yet, I would challenge you to search the scriptures. Look for characteristics of what a godly wife looks like and pray about those things and look for that. If you're already married, then we can do the work of leading our wives and loving our wives and listening to them. I'm finding my spot here. So step one in marriage is being aligned and being together for what you're doing. You know, when two become one.
I didn't hear that.
Being aligned. Alignment.
Okay.
Alignment. So being together in the things that we're doing. I see, you know, sadly sometimes see examples of where husband and wife aren't together in the way they're managing their kids and finances or whatever they're doing. And can observe where doing things in a worldly type of way doesn't help their situation. So alignment's the single biggest thing. Whatever it is you're doing, be aligned and together in attacking those issues. So the way you get there on that is communication. I make it a regular part of my daily practice and routine to make time for listening and talking to my wife. I walk in the door for work, before I even set my stuff down, I'm talking to my wife about what's happening that day, things she's talking to me about, of activities, how things go for the day, whatever the case may be. Something that's really helped us a lot in that is what we call heart talk versus work talk. And we just kind of learned that through a marriage conference we went to a couple of years ago. Because me as a guy, I'm sitting here thinking, work talk. Whatever we're talking about, let's go. What's our action plan? We're going to go do it. My wife is the polar opposite. It's difficult for her to engage in work talk. She's all heart talk. She just wants to verbally process and just talk about stuff. For me, that was always a really big challenge because I'm like, so what are we going to go do? It's like I would listen and want to be listening, but it was a challenge for me to be patient and to really understand her. So we learned the difference between heart talk and work talk. And so we actually had to make that a part of our conversation. So it's like, so is this a heart talk or is this a work talk? And so to understand and listen to each other in our conversation. So a lot of times as a guy and the leader of our family, I just need to be there and to listen to her and have heart talk with her to where she can verbally process different ideas. That helps us get to more meaningful work talk. Like, okay, so what are we actually going to do? Are we going to change anything we're actually doing? What's the plan here? But just simply listening and taking a pause and listening to our wives and understanding and listening to what they're doing. I think for me as a guy, a lot of times I just want to be like the action plan and go do something like that. But leading a family isn't going and being like a bull in a china cabinet. It's listening and learning how to serve. Ephesians 5:25 tells us, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So I've got to pause what I want to do in my life and think about other people, primarily her, and how I can serve her and listen to her in the situations we're in. So communication is big, too. If there's an issue in life, whatever that issue may be, have the courage as a man to lead the resolution of that. That's going to look different in lots of different situations. Parenting is going to look different in lots of situations. But have the courage to address that situation. I see too many times in life where in a marriage situation there's conflict that the longer it goes without being resolved, the more challenging that is and the more heartbreak and discord that can lead to. And again, this is going to vary depending on your situation you're in with your wife. Every wife is going to be different. Husband, the way they go about doing those things. That's a matter of prayerfully considering the situation and what that may look like, but listening to the needs there and finding ways to resolve it. But whatever you do, don't let those things linger. You know, the devil gets a foothold on those things, and that just slowly creeps in and creates division. So I would just challenge you, wherever you're at, if there's ever an issue that you need to address, to have the courage to address that issue and to don't allow it to linger. You know, some people, they need some time to cool off. Some people, they need to address it then. Whatever the situation you're in with your wife, learn to listen and to love her in a way that you can address that situation and come to a resolution that's a win for everybody. What not to do, don't go home from the conference today and be like, babe, this guy at the conference said you're wrong and we need to fix this problem. You know, don't do something like that. We got an issue, we need to fix it. So listen and respond in a loving, appropriate way, whatever the situation you're in. And a color-coded shared calendar is an absolute must. And that's kind of a silly thing, but that's kind of a practical thing, too. Lance and I were talking in the car kind of here just a couple weeks ago. I was talking to a guy that's in our group, and it's like, dude, you got to get yourself a color-coded shared calendar, whatever you're doing. Simple, practical thing. there's technology tools that can help us. We got a color-coded shared calendar, and it's like, babe, before we schedule anything, we're both in it. It's a way, the tool that helps us communicate. We're looking at our calendar together to make sure we understand the logistics of what we're doing. That just simple tool of helping us work things out and figure out what we're doing with our life. So a couple thoughts on kids. When it comes to living the Christian life and discipleship, discipling our kids should be a top priority. I would even go as far as saying you probably should, if you're not discipling your kids, you probably shouldn't be involved in an activity where you're discipling other guys. You need to disciple your kids first, and when you've got a good handle on that, then go and live out things where you're discipling other men. And kids are different. Whether we're talking to your own kids or grandkids or whatever, kids are different. We kind of got to adapt our strategies to the difference of kids. So these are some general principles that we lean on, and most of these are gleaned from a couple different parenting books that we really, really appreciate. So concept one, Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and in the end he will not depart from it. So train up, not discipline up. So what's the difference between training and discipline? So training is intentional, focused on a purpose for preparing for a situation that's going to come up in the future. Discipline is reactive. Something just happened where behavior didn't go the way it should be, and responding to that didn't happen the right way. So train up, not discipline up. So and men, as men and leaders of our family, we're responsible for the training of our kids. Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So just some practical things we do. We help prepare our kids for different situations. When we were little, we would have sit practice where we would have them sit for different periods of time to help sit through different situations, like sitting still in church or sitting still in class or whatever the case may be. Practicing logistics is a really good way, especially this kind of one that equates to time management as well. Practicing logistics with your kids, and what I mean by logistics is coming and going, sitting, standing, just movement of activities. It sounds really simple, but a lot of times it can be really challenging to go and do different activities. If it's like moving, like an act of Congress to get everybody in the van, and down the road. But practicing logistics is a really good way for kids to help learn self-control of their body. And that helps them learn self-control of their emotions. So we practice logistics at our house. We'll have sit practice. We'll have, as kids are little, that's looked like different things as they've aged. But, we've had practices where we practice getting ready in the morning. We practice getting in and out of the van. And it sounds kind of silly, but really we've gotten to where we're pretty effective at moving kids from place to place. And we've seen where those things help develop good attitudes as well. If a kid can learn how to physically do something, that gives them the confidence and the know-how to control their body, which can be translated to, hey, let's change that and have an attitude approach to that. You can control your emotions too, because I know you can control your body. So we practice things like that. And communication with kids, something that we've noticed and practiced in our house is how we talk to them. So kind of like we take a budget inventory of our finances and we take an inventory of our time. Have you ever taken an inventory of how you talk to your kids or grandkids? We've done that on many occasions, and the way we look at that is, so, and relating to training, what's the ratio of how I'm speaking to them in terms of telling them to do things and what they should be doing, compared to things where I'm telling them not to do or knows of something? And I would bet that if you've never thought about that before, what we discovered when we did that was we were saying no a whole lot more than what we were saying yes to. And so training, we need to aim the conversations we have with our kids towards this is what we want to accomplish, the yeses, as opposed to the no's. The no's got to happen sometimes. Sometimes you need to say no to the stuff. But when we're teaching and training, we need to focus our conversation on this is what the should do, what we want to have happen, more so than what we don't want to have happen. And I think about this in a spiritual aspect as well. Have you guys ever heard of the counterfeit dollar bill example of detecting, fraud? you know, the bank teller, how does the bank teller tell whether it's real money or not? They have to handle the truth and learn what the real thing is, because there's an infinite number of ways where somebody can do something counterfeit. So you'll never be able to cover all the no situations in life. There's always going to be some new way a kid comes up with something to do wrong. They have sinful hearts just like we do. They're always going to be looking for some way to do something wrong, because that's their sinful nature. They're sinful people just like we are. We have to focus our teaching and instruction on what is the truth and what is the yes in a situation to help them learn how to make good decisions on their own. Just as a general guide for that, when we address our kids in different situations, from like the ages to 0 to 5, as parents, we're the authority in their life. It's not negotiable. They don't have a say in what's happening. 0 to, you know, that's, you know, just kind of general age gap. 0 to 5, mom and dad say so, that's what's happening. You know, about from the time they're 5 to 12, that's an age range where we want to help them develop thought processes of their own of how to make good decisions. 12 on up, they're probably just going to be making decisions on their own, and you're there to influence and lead and guide. And those are general age gaps. That's all going to be different. Clear and consistent expectations and modeling. So this is where we go back to the wheel as a guide. You know, if we want to help disciple our kids and train them up in the way that they should go, what's my devotional life? What's my prayer life look like? Am I having a devotional life that I would want my kids to mimic? Have I modeled having quiet times with them? And so we spend time with our kids one-on-one. We spend time with our kids reading and praying with them, how to have a devotional time or meeting with God. We make memorizing verses a practice in our house. That's a good, we kind of double that up with our school. You know, it's a good practice. You can do that as part of school. Hey, it's good to memorize something, so let's memorize scripture. You know, reading practice. We want to be able to read, so let's read the Bible. And I would challenge you to do life together with kids. I see a lot of times where dads are trying to do stuff and not incorporate their kids into it. And there's some stuff you do where, you know, if a kid can't, you know, depending on the age, they can't physically do whatever you're doing. But I try to involve my kids in the activities that I'm involved with so that we can do those things together. And that was a challenge for me because I like to go do activities and do different stuff. But I had to take some of the different activities and tweak them a little bit and shape them to where I could bring the kids along with me. Those have led to a lot of good teaching and teaching opportunities and relationship building with our kids. So just a few concepts there on parenting and raising kids. And finally, I just want to leave you with a challenge that that there is hope and there is victory in walking with the Lord. One of my favorite verses is Isaiah 41:10. It says, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, and I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." In Ephesians chapter 6, not going to read the whole thing there, but Satan is out here to thwart our spiritual advancement. We are in the middle of a war. So what's that got to do with time management and leading kids in discipleship? Well, if we don't recognize the situation that we're in, then we're going to be left on the sidelines. Satan's biggest trick in fighting a war is to convince us that there isn't one here to fight. We are in the midst of a spiritual battle. We need to be engaged and involved in these things. And that's why the time management here is critical, that we get in the Word, that we get in prayer, and that we put those things in practice into our life. Because the enemy's biggest trick is to convince us that there's not a war here to fight. If there's not a war here to fight, we just let our enemy advance without even recognizing what's happening. So we need to be engaged in these things and make them a part of our life. So I've got a few other sheets here. There's a worksheet there to kind of look at just developing a life goal. Maybe you've already got one. Maybe you thought about that. If not, take some time to block out to think about that. It's kind of a little activity there to kind of think about what I want my life to look like 1 year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. What kind of steps do I need to take to accomplish that? And don't go all out. It's just something we practice in our life when it comes to making goals is we'll sit down about once a year and look at where we're at and evaluate, hey, what do I want to do? Are we headed in the right direction we want to go? And we'll just periodically, you know, block out some time to look at that. So if that's not a practice you're regularly doing, I would challenge you to do something like that. This is sometimes simple. I'm the kind of guy who my eyes are always bigger than my stomach. I just want to go and do everything, and then I find out I can't. So I would just challenge you to take just simple little steps to get there. Wherever you're at, whatever the next simple little step is of something that you see in your life that you don't, that isn't valuable, to make a plan for how not to do that. And to pick one simple little thing to replace that with what a should-be thing that we want to do to make a part of your life. You know, let's say you look at your wheel and it's like, my word spoke is short. I need more word. You know, what's one simple little step you can do to take away something and fill in that gap with getting the word more? Or let's say your fellowship spoke is lacking. Like, I need to get into fellowship. Whatever that case may be, take a look at where you're at and evaluate that for yourself. What's one simple little step that you can take of stopping something that's not valuable and filling in that gap that you've just created with something that is valuable? And that's, I put that, in this little thing, I put that in and build that into here so I see that and it's a regular part of what I'm doing. But I would just encourage you to take simple little steps to be able to get there. And there's just a few other resource things on here. I plagiarized the Navigator's website on some of that stuff. They say on there you can share it, so here it is, just in case you guys aren't familiar with that. And there's a plug for the Kansas Communities. There's a link to that somewhere in there too. So I just want to leave you a summary of things to know about what we talked about today. You know, what's my purpose in life? What are my priorities and decision making that are going to shape how I live my life out? And disciple and make time for your family first. So things to do. Take some time to develop a life goal if you haven't done that. Do an inventory of your time and activities and cross-check that with the wheel and see where you're at, see if there's things lacking you need to make a change to. And just take one step of obedience at a time to get there, whatever that might be. So that's all I had. Thank you guys so much for your time and attention. Any, like I said, like Chris and David said before, this is workshop mode. I don't want to be just the guy talking to you the whole time. Any questions or comments or things to discuss?
What would you like to see a grandparent do for your kids with regard to discipleship?
Grandparents with kids. Well, we love ours babysitting our kids so we can go out and have dates. And while they're doing that, our grandparents are great. I mean, we've been so blessed with having grandparents where we trust them and allow them to take care of our kids. But yeah, I mean, pour it into them at appropriate. You know, check with the parents first and say, hey, what can we do to help in those things? You know, load your house up with some books. That, you know, who doesn't love reading books together with kids? You know, find some books to read. You know, activities to do. You know, sometimes it looks different depending on grandparents' capability to chase around a little one, but, you know, activities together that are great instead of sitting in front of a screen, you know, stuff like that. It's just, you know, check with the parents. Say, hey, how can we, you know, when we're watching them, what's a good way we can do with those things? And kind of indirectly answer your question, you know, what do we do? You know, my wife and I, we're praying for our kids regularly. What are grandparents doing regularly praying for their kids?
I think maybe my comment probably addresses what David asked the question. One of the best examples I see in Scripture for parenting or being a dad, fathering, is in Job chapter 1, verse 5, where Job was watchful over his kids. He was paying attention to what was going on, and then he went to the Lord. He was prayerful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just paying attention to what your kids are involved in on a daily basis and bringing that before the Lord, bringing your kids before the Lord. And another comment about the grandparents is, I think a good way grandparents can minister to their family, their children and grandchildren, is hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let us cook dinner. You know, we'll clean it up.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Cool. Very good. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, and teaching and training. You know, grandparents oftentimes have a lot of wisdom and experience and things that would be great for them to share with the grandkids. You know, how to do things, you know, whatever that may be, working, doing whatever kind of project together. Anything else? Yeah.
So I have two sons in college. One is 21 and one is 19. And you talked a lot, which I was struck and agree with this notion that if, you know, be careful not to be discipling everyone else's kid or college age or adult when you've got those kids at home. And so I was struck by that. Agree with it. However, one little twist on it, just a hair, is with two college sons, and I still have a teenage boy at home, they saw how important with me meeting with my Paul, you know, if I'm Timothy mm-hmm. and I had a Paul, they saw that. And I called one of my college boys the other day, and I said, you know, I really want to meet with you, and I want to talk with you. I don't want you hiding. I mean, I want to, if you want to mm-hmm. discuss that or go with down that road. And he said, Dad, I'm already meeting with a guy, and I found out that, you know, there's a lot of things that your boys will tell other men that they're just not going to tell them.
Yeah.
And I think I was really grateful that's why I think it takes the church.
Amen to that.
Church being the church is men meeting with men, and I have a responsibility as a dad, but I'm also very grateful for other Christian men meeting with my boys.
Yeah.
And so I'm not discouraging. I love what you said, and now I'm convicted to go home to my 14-year-old and make sure that while he's under my roof, mm-hmm. that I'm not missing that.
Right.
But at the very same time, I'm praying that other men will meet with him.
So, and I've seen even, you know, that varies with age group, but I've seen many examples, even with our kids, where, you know, dad or mom can repeat the same thing over and over again, but the one time somebody else says it just clicks, and I think that's great.
You know, I think as I look today and listen, I think we're raising a bunch of cretins.
What was that?
A bunch of cretins.
Oh.
The book of Titus says that cretins are all liars, evil brute beasts, and lazy gluttons. And he said, now, Titus, I want you to go to Crete and not just lead them to Christ and establish churches, but to raise up leaders, elders. And so here's the two things he said I want you to do. Number one, you teach them sound doctrine. You teach them the truth. Secondly, you flesh it out. You set them an example. And I think if we would do those two things, and you've got a lot of good examples, you tell them the truth and you model it. You won't have a bunch of cretins in your household.
Great, thanks, Elmer.
That's good.
Okay.